Full of Sound and Fury is a podcast for adults, by adults, containing adult language. Listener discretion is advised. Witches of Apple. Witches, I tell you.
I think Priya is trying to join.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Well, shut my mouth. I was about to say, I think it's going to be a twosome, but...
He's sending messages, but I don't think he's connected to the same call as the rest of us.
He's speaking to somebody. He's on a podcast.
He's in a parallel... He's in the mirror universe, the mirror dimension. Oh, he says the computer...
Dormammu, I have come here to podcast. Who the hell are you? Well, all right, I'm excited.
There he is. What's up?
Hey, what's going on?
You made it.
I did, kind of accidentally. Hold on, I got to turn off the audio for the game, and I need to recombobulate.
Don't worry, it's still 3-0.
No, it's 9-3.
All I know is Kubiak and Andy Reid are racing to the bottom, so...
I think maybe part of that 9-3 was a 2-point conversion, like a conversion return.
Look, Seattle had 5 points today, so
a defensive 2-point play, something like this. I love those. Yeah. So it turns out there's now 1-point play. Like as of a couple years ago, it's possible to score exactly 1 point.
How do you do that?
You return a failed 2-point conversion.
No. That's 2 points.
Oh shit.
You get a safety during a conversion attempt.
Wow.
Yeah. So somebody either kicks an extra point or gets or goes for a 2-point conversion, and somehow that turns into
somehow
a safety.
The quarterback goes 95 yards either way?
Well, or for example, the possession changes, and then, like, let's say you try a 2-point conversion, you fumble, I recover it, but then I get pushed back into the end zone, then you get a point.
Huh.
I can't wait for that to happen.
Yeah, right? I don't think it's ever happened, but it is possible now for that to happen.
Thank you, Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, fucking. How the hell is that guy still employed? Jesus Christ.
Oh, I know.
Perpetual boogeyman of the podcast, Jeff Fisher.
He's the worst.
He's the boogeyman of L.A.
Is T-Bone joining us, or, like, what's up?
Keyshawn is an unhealthy scratch tonight.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
He's a questionable.
No, he's
been
he's,
downgraded
he's out.
To out.
Yep. But who is here? Well, there's me. I'm Cyrus Mortazavi of Kirkland, Washington. I get to host Full of Sound and Fury podcast, to which you are currently listening to. From Austin, Texas, and recently of around the world, is Ariel Rodriguez.
Howdy.
Also with us, very excited because he was a late join from Stanford, California, is Riyad Wabi.
Although currently from New York City, but yes.
Oh, shit. You're on the road. Speaking.
I'm on the road. That's right. This is a road call.
Nice.
So we have this both coasts represented now.
That's right.
And the center.
And the center, yeah.
Podcast host coast to coast. Sorry, I'm gonna try something. that seemed like my thing.
So it's like 4 a.m. where you're at, Rio. If I've got my math right.
Oh, no, it's...
Which I'm sure it's not.
No, I don't even know. It's 10. It's 10 p.m. Not too bad. So what is happening, gentlemen?
A lot. I'm trying to, like, decide in my head here where we want to start.
I mean, I don't know if there's an elephant.
It's not Jeff
room,
Fisher,
but,
is it?
Like, maybe he's part of the problem. I don't know.
It's part of all the problems.
It's true. Most problems involve Jeff Fisher somehow. I mean, those Cowboys are pretty damn good, though.
Those who?
Those Cowboys, pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, inexplicably so.
It's explicable. They have a couple of seriously good rookies. They have a good O-line like they have for the past few years. I
mean, yeah.
Good for them.
The line has been something they've been working towards for years, but the comedy of errors that allowed them to, like, get those two guys that have, like, they've built their team around is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like succeeding in spite of yourself, but hey, I mean, they'll take it any way they can, I suppose.
Yeah, I certainly will, because there's a lot in spite of themselves. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, Jason Garrett has, like, pulled his head out of his ass.
Oh, really? Is he calling better plays? And being
yeah, he actually, like, really did a good job coaching in that Philadelphia game when they had to rally back. They would have lost that game if it had been vintage Garrett.
Hmm.
So I don't hate him anymore. Good for him. All my hate's pointed squarely at Jeff Fisher.
It may be that he's only doing this so that he can let you down later.
Maybe. But I don't know how he would
do that.
Maybe.
You shouldn't go back to him, man. He hasn't changed.
Seattle can't. It's like still got that wife beater.
That's right. It's just an abusive relationship. On the other hand, Seattle managed to lose this week to Tampa Bay.
And they can't block anybody.
Congratulations. Yeah. A lot of the NFC has turned to shit.
Richard Sherman got mad that someone held him. I thought that was the very definition of irony.
Carolina sucks. Jets suck.
Knicks suck. Yankees suck. Krypton sucks.
Nice. Yeah, it's kind of.
Is Denver going to back their ass in the Super Bowl again? I guess that's my question.
Come on, Denver's not good this year.
Ain't nobody good in the AFC, though.
New England's good.
Are they? The Jets just give you guys a game.
The Jets always give us a game. When it's in New Jersey and it's cold and it's, that's always a game. I mean, look, there are only some people who can be at their full athletic potential when there's like that stench of garbage in the air. And so this is what happens in Jersey. It's a natural sort of defense against.
You're not worried about your front seven at all, for real?
Oh, no, I am, for sure. Okay. And Gronk went out with an injury today, and, I mean, it's just not pretty, but, like...
He Gronk, that what he do.
Yeah, yeah. On the other hand, the D-line is, we'll see. It's been worse. Brady's pretty good.
Yeah, no. No, they're definitely in the conversation. I just, that front seven is shaky enough that I'd be scared of like a.
But here's the thing, like, who else in the AFC is any good at all? The Raiders? I think they're probably the next best team in the AFC.
They are, and yet that defense scares me to death.
In what way? Like, you don't want to play it, or you do?
In, like, they're basically not there.
Yeah.
There's 11 guys wearing Raiders jerseys on the defensive side of the ball. But I mean.
Present.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
And that's about it.
They have a Derek Carr, though.
They do have a Derek Carr.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just hard to believe that Raiders can be good. But then again, look, I Jack Del Rio has some. I don't know. He's better than some coaches. That's not saying much, but like.
Yeah.
Come on, he's certainly better than Jeff Fisher.
And Bill O'Brien. That guy bugs me. I think I tweeted that today.
Yeah, I think you did. I saw that tweet.
I'm tired of like his like snarky post-game preferences where he's trying to be Popovich and or Belichick, and it's like, dude, you haven't earned that.
Yeah, that's a...
You're still in the you have to answer dumb questions club.
Yeah, it's an instance of maybe of cargo cult coaching, right? He thinks that if he acts like that, then the wins will come. But he is mistaken about the nature of things.
That's very zen. I'm not sure I understood it, but I was very zen.
So in World War II, in the Pacific, in the South Pacific, this is where the term cargo cult comes from. In the South Pacific, there were these islands that various militaries, like the U.S. military in particular, is an example of this. They set up these airstrips on these islands, and they would use them either as a staging point for, to like stage material there, or there were like Marines on the island and they were trying to reinforce them, and so they would build these makeshift airstrips, and they would deliver goods to the islands, right? Like they would have planes flying in with goods, with cargo. And there were these sort of primitive peoples living on some of these islands. And what they saw was there was this airstrip
And they saw, you know, like a make they saw a wooden tower, and they saw a person in the tower sort of watching for airplanes to come in, and then stuff would appear as if from the skies, and they thought, well, the gods deliver as long as you build this airstrip. And so they would they had this cult, or these cults grew up, in which they would sort of build what looked a lot like an airstrip, like an Air Force installation, except it was all just fake. It was just like their imitation of it. And they thought, well, if I build this, then the gods will deliver goods to me. And so that's known as
a
cargo cult.
And that's a lot like the Rager's defense. Is that the moral of the story?
Well, no. So I thought we were talking about Bill O'Brien.
We'll just stop them.
So this notion of a cargo cult is somehow like encoding the idea that sometimes things have a cause that you don't understand. And so you think that like A causes B, but it turns out that A and B are both caused by C. So in this case, like, it's not that having the airstrip causes the cargo to appear. It's needing to deliver cargo causes the airstrip to appear and then the cargo to appear. Right? So this is an example of a misunderstanding of causality. And so Bill O'Brien misunderstands causality. He thinks, if I act like an asshole, my team will be good. But no, in fact, if your team is good, then you can act like an asshole. So
a neat little bow.
So this is
– boom.
Yeah. I'd like to think that Richard Feynman would have described it in those terms. His explanation of cargo cult is what my explanation was just derived from. So as far as I know, he's the one who coined the term. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's my understanding. He talked about it in the context of science, but I'm sure, you know, he would have talked about it in the context of football instead, because surely he would have been a great fantasy football player. So.
Yeah, this reminds me of another story that you recently retweeted, Riyadh, about the wooden decoys in the German line in World War II. You got to share that.
Oh shit!
See, that sounds like the Raiders, Steve.
The Germans would build these decoy airfields, trying to like draw in British bombers, right? And I think there was one in Belgium or somewhere like this. And the Germans built it, and it was extremely carefully built. It was really convincing, except they built it so carefully, it took them a really long time to build it. And so the British sort of intelligence people got a bunch of sort of aerial photos of it as it was being built. And so they knew that it was this wooden fake airfield. And so the day after it was finished, the British sent a single bomber that circled the airfield once and then dropped a wooden bomb on it. So a fake airfield gets a fake bomb. Yeah. So
sick burn.
Yeah. Highly, highly sick burn. Now that is apparently apocryphal. If you look on Snopes, they say we can't confirm or deny this was reported during the war, but the only source we have is this one report. And it's not clear that it was like a secondhand thing. It was like a guy told me that somebody said it. So In these days of fake news, I don't want anyone to think that I'm on Putin's payroll. True. So, anyway, that said, share and like us on Facebook. And no, I don't. Am I supposed to say that? I'm supposed to say that, right?
Yes, but only at the end.
Oh shit! Okay, well, we could just edit that right out. All right. Fix it in post.
So. Well, I think we've all seen Doctor Strange. Yes? No? Yes.
I have not. No, I'm sorry. I'm a bad person.
No, that's okay. You're not a bad person.
But you should talk about it anyway.
Oh, we're going.
I heard it's good. That's all I know.
What do you think, Ariel? Was it good?
I enjoyed it. It's an origin story, so it's got the same – I think they're just tropes at this point of origin stories, since superhero films have been going over the same territory for so many years now. But the visuals were incredible, I felt. The kind of world that they built is pretty cool, pretty good addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So overall, like, I enjoyed the movie. I think, you know, there's some tired parts just because of the origin story, the needs to move the origin story forward. And Doctor Strange is a little bit of a Tony Stark clone, just a tiny amount. But it was a lot of fun. At the end of the day, I enjoyed it very much.
Maybe we can get Trump to ban origin stories. He would do that, right? Because they're terrible.
I'm sure he'd promise to. I actually really liked the fact that it was an origin story. I think he has an awesome origin story. And I was really worried that they were like not going to do that and rob that character of like of how he starts off like this, you know, much like Stark, as you pointed out, which is a fair critique, as this very spoiled guy who, you know, finds a way to become a very important hero.
And they do manage to, I guess, with Doctor Strange compared to Tony Stark, like they take his arrogance and they shove his face in it, I think, a little more than they do for Tony, at least in the first movie, first Iron Man movie.
Right, right.
So, I mean, kind of the whole point of Stark is that he gets away with being an asshole a lot of the time, right? Like, he gets himself in trouble and then somehow manages to find a way out of it. And, yeah, he can't learn too much of a lesson because he has to be the lovable asshole.
Tony Stark does not lose what he's best at. That's the difference between the two.
Yeah, he is.
Stephen Strange pays the ultimate price for his hubris.
You're right.
Building things out of a box of scraps in a cave?
Yeah, so he's still MacGyver. He's MacGyver with shit in his head when he's shit in his chest cavity.
Yeah, and he doesn't lose it. He doesn't transform like as a. I mean, he does and he doesn't. I mean, he doesn't. The way Stephen Strange transforms, it's not the same. It's not nowhere near the same.
No, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad that they spent as much time as they did on that part of it. Because I think that is one of his defining characteristics, and they really nailed it. I thought it was excellent. I think it's the best Marvel film since the second Captain America movie.
Wow! All right.
I really liked it.
Ringing endorsement.
Yeah, I was worried about Batch doing the English accent, which is the American English accent. No problem. I think he did just fine. Yeah. But after Charlie Cox, I was worried.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he can just do his house impression when he's a doctor, and then from there, it kind of works pretty well. Yeah. What did you think of Rachel McAdams?
I thought she was very good. I ever since I saw The Time Traveler's Wife, I've kind of come out of the opinion that she's actually one of the most underrated actresses of her generation, and I really wish they would give her meatier stuff to work with.
Well, she was really good in the second season of True Detective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I felt like she didn't have much to do in Doctor Strange, which is kind of a shame because I know she's a better actress than what they gave her.
Yeah, well, she's the girlfriend character again.
Yes. You know, and at least Gwyneth Paltrow had more for Pepper to do, it seemed, than Rachel McAdams had for her character.
Yeah. It was very reminiscent to me of when Emma Stone was being wasted as Gwen Stacy.
Yeah.
That girl's more talented than just, you know, this confessor figure for Peter Parker. And as we're saying this, we're still like over a year and a half away from of the first superheroine film coming out from Marvel.
Yeah.
Or is it 2019? I don't even remember.
It's 2019, actually. I think it's 2019.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Come on, guys.
They should just say fuck it and do a Black Widow movie as like a fourth movie, like sooner. They don't need a bunch of setup. They could just do it whenever they want.
Instead, we're going to get Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think of the trailer for that?
I'm pretty pumped, but I think I'm like the 1% that actually is excited for this movie and not like either annoyed for perceived social injustice or the fact that it's not faithful enough.
Look,
I'm excited too, honestly.
Go ahead.
Sweet, 2%. Come on, Riyadh, jump in.
Yeah, I'll jump 3%. In. I'm on the side of good here. That it will be good. That is, I mean, I'm always on the side of good, never evil. But in this case, yeah, I think the movie will be fine. Look, there probably is some sense in which, you know, they picked a white girl because it makes it easier to sell the movie, and they picked her because she makes every movie easier to sell. But
correct.
Then again, like. There's nothing. There's something to be said for the idea that all of these genres it's not as if when you watch an anime, you're just because it's anime, everyone in it is Japanese, right?
Right.
So the idea that it must be an Asian actress in order to, it's like that is not in itself convincing. If they can adapt the movie in a way that speaks better to Western audiences, like okay, fine, I'm not going to worry too much about it. Like maybe blame the audience more than the director after, or than the you know production crew as a whole, because they're only slaves to what they're trying to do, which is to say, sell the movie.
And I think to that point, you have to have ScarJo to get this thing made.
Or something like that.
It's a whole property. It's Eastern really, property.
Yeah, you have to have some really big name. I mean, to make any movie where a woman is headlining it, you have to have somebody who's got massive name recognition. Because
yeah.
whether we want to – I mean, look, I don't like the fact that this is true, but it certainly seems to be the case that movies where women are the headliners have more trouble getting made and have more trouble getting audiences than movies where men are headliners. And I'd rather that not be the case. I'm not saying it should be the case, but it seems like it may be the case currently. So maybe one way to improve that situation is to, you know, get audiences used to the idea of having movies with strong female leads. And one way to do that is to be able to sell the damn thing in the first place. And that means you got to get asses in seats. So if that means you got to have ScarJo or any of these huge names, well, that's fine. That's how it goes. Just it's not as if she's lacking the talent.
Right.
The Ringer ran recently about the idea that maybe we're in a post-leading man / post-leading woman Hollywood right now, which is why you're seeing so many of top name talent doing things like Doctor Strange, for example, where Chiwetel Ejiofor is like, you know, third billing.
I mean, in what sense are we post-leading it? Like, look at all the huge movies of the year. They've all had like pretty big names in them. Name, like, what's one like massive
bigger than the IP?
Yeah, and
I feel like the IP is what's driving the stuff right now. I'm willing and hoping to be wrong.
Well, where's the evidence for that? It seems like every one of these Marvel tent poles has some huge name in it. It's not as if any of them are coming in with no names. No, but my point is, like, we have no way of analyzing it because we can't separate the Marvel from the huge names. Every Marvel movie also happens to have huge names in it. So it's like, I don't get where we can say, well, you don't need the names, you only need the Marvel, because we don't have any experimental evidence for that. I mean,
well, there just aren't many big movies that are made in that. All the tentpole is old IP or adapted IP.
Yeah, sure, no, I agree, but that.
I mean, there's good films, but they don't come out till.
Well, actually, I saw one recently. Not to change the subject too much, we can come back to it. I saw Hell or High Water. That was quite good,
okay.
Real good.
No, that's good to hear. But I got to be honest with you, I haven't heard of it.
It came out earlier in the year, March, April, May, something like this, I think.
That's cool.
It's a heist or kind of a crime movie with a Southern fried tilt to it.
Southern fried?
Jeff, yeah, you know how they say. Jeff Bridges is a Texas Ranger who's just about to retire, and he is freaking fantastic in it. Chris Pine is one of the leading dudes in it. The movie is strong through and through. It's
cool.
The dialogue is good. I mean, sparing but good. The cinematography is beautiful. The story is sharp. I mean, everything about the movie is quite good.
Man, I hadn't heard of this before. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, if you look Rotten Tomatoes, it's got like a 99% or something. I mean, the thing
damn.
Is
fantastic. Yeah.
It's gonna get some award nods, Oscar is my love. Guess.
Cool.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Arrival?
I hope Bridges does.
I have not. I've heard good things about it, though.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, too. I highly recommend checking out Arrival. It's hard sci-fi that really kind of, you know, as all hard sci-fi does, get you kind of thinking about humanity a little bit. So it's
nice.
I highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
You know, I was just giving Hollywood a hard time. So let me you know, be nice as for when they've earned it. There, it does feel like there's one really good hard sci-fi film in quarter three every year, and I guess this year it's Arrival.
And last year, I assume it was
The Martian.
Was Interstellar? Oh, The Martian last year, Interstellar the year before, right?
I'm you got
late
it.
On that one.
Right on. For sure, check out Arrival. It's yeah, and it's different vibe than Interstellar and The Martian. Even though it has to do with aliens, it's more an Earthbound story, but.
I saw a snarky comment that Arrival was what Contact should have been.
I think I saw exactly the same comment.
Yeah, but, in some ways. I think it's got its own style, and it's a slightly different message that it's trying to convey at the end, but I can see that. I can see where that comes from.
Yeah. You know, one of the nice things about being on that plane for 8 hours to and from London was I did get to catch up on flicks this summer that I was interested in, but not enough to go see.
Like Independence Day Resurgence, perhaps?
No, that was not on my list.
I can't even say it out. I can't even finish the title. I saw that on the plane over there. Man.
Tell us more about why that wasn't on your list. All right.
Oh, man.
I did see part of it the other day on cable, waiting for something else to come on, the original one. And I was like, man, Jeff Goldblum was young 20 years ago.
Yeah, no shit.
That's apropos of nothing.
Fun. It was like the original was fun. It wasn't good, but it was fun. This one sounds like it was both unfun and not good. So it's like, oof.
Yeah. It's basically just calling back to everything the first movie was, with barely tongue-in-cheek, and then trying to be like adventurous without any sense of adventure. It was, yeah.
That does not sound good to me in any way, shape, or form.
I'm getting fucking sick of this, and Hollywood's been doing it for a decade now. I mean, obviously more, but like for the last decade, it's been almost like a steady diet of this bullshit where it's like, hey, you're nostalgic for this shit, right? Here, we didn't think about this at all, but look at all these nods to the original that we're inserting. So you're going to watch it, right? It's like, fuck you. I mean, this is like insulting my intelligence, but apparently it doesn't insult everyone else's intelligence because they're fucking watching them. So
that's how I felt about the new Ghostbusters, having seen it now. I laughed once in that whole movie. I really wanted to like it, but what a waste of Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig's time.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, McKinnon was great as Holtzman, and I understand why everyone loved that character, but
on the other hand, if you
it was
want
just, it was, it right, wasn't that it was bad, it was just so meh.
That sucks. That sucks. I was going to say, for all of the Hollywood types that clearly listen to this podcast for advice on how to make money, they should definitely go and watch Fury Road, because that is basically the perfect way of making a throwback movie. Just like in every way perfect. I don't know. There's nothing more to say about it.
Well, in that case, it helps when the original guy goes back to the well, too. And he still got it, moreover. He does a Phantom Menace all over the place.
But if you look at it, they put in so many new elements. Like, they brought in all this stuff. They really refreshed. It's not like they were just, like, serving you the same shit, just reheated in the microwave. Like, they thought about it really hard, and they reinvented the movie and in a modern way. It still calls back to the original, but it's not, like, winking at you through the camera. It's not like – right? There's no one's barreling the camera saying, eh?
Yeah, they didn't have 17
Actually,
cameos.
I think that was half of Tom Hardy's lines, but I see your point.
He had lines?
A few.
I thought all he said was, "Oh, my world is ash."
Oh, man.
I guess you guys aren't watching this, but the defenses apparently have decided to stop playing in this Sunday night football game between Kansas City and Denver, and so now it's just like
Has it become a shootout?
No, it's just like short passing, like little dink and dunk.
Oh, yes. Like, it is Simeon versus Alex Smith.
Yeah. Well, it's also Andy Reid on one side, so, you know, we know it'll happen. It's just...
All right, so I watched Ghostbusters, and I gave that a thumbs down. I also watched on the plane, I rewatched Civil War. Okay. Trying to figure out what the hell is wrong with me that I don't love that movie as much as Ariel and Keyshawn. And it's not that it's a bad movie, but I still didn't come away from it super pumped. And I think it's because it's a little too Michael Bay-y. I think they were relying on their action pieces a little bit too much, which is a shame because they had a cool story. And I think that's where I'm a little out on it.
At least they didn't have any blender shots.
No, it's true. It's very true. If that's like a bad Marvel film, they're doing okay.
Yeah, we'll see what Infinity War looks like. I mean, Civil War was pretty ambitious with how many characters and how many different things were going on.
In that.
But like Infinity War is going to take that to another, you know, no pun intended, given Doctor Strange, a plane of existence here. It's going to be, who the hell knows? I mean, it could be a CGI barf fest if they're not careful. That's what I'm worried about the most, honestly.
Right. Well, you know, and the other thing I think that hurt Civil War was that they tried to like shove Spidey in there toward, I think clearly once they had started getting the film going. And so that was a little awkward. I mean, it wasn't terrible to their credit, but I don't think that played as well as they wanted it could have, or they wanted it to. But it was a tough situation, so I'm not going to beam up too badly for it.
Fair enough.
Plus, it's cool to see him back, so.
Yeah, and I feel like they really, maybe I mentioned this in a previous episode, I don't remember, but I feel like they really nailed the New Yorker aspect of Spider-Man with Tom Holland compared to the other two previous two actors. Like the smack talking is just the right amount of New York type smack talk. I just feel like they really got it now. Hopefully they'll continue that.
But Rian, you're there. What do you think? Can you shout someone out the window and see if they sound like Peter Parker?
I mean, the last person I ran into getting off the subway, like physically ran into, sounded a lot like Peter Parker. So yes. I'm guessing that that's.
Well, all right then. Well, the last movie I saw, and I hate that Keyshawn is not here because this would literally blow his mind, was X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, man.
And boys, I liked it.
What?
Yeah. I didn't love it, but I did like it.
Honestly, it was. I thought it was better than Days of Future Past.
It is, inexplicably so.
I thought Days of Future Past was a bucket of dumb fun. I thought it was good. Like, not good, but like good, fun, fine. You know, watchable.
I wanted Days of Future Past to be better than it was. And what I got was like, somehow I got a fifth Hunger Games film because they wanted to do Jennifer Lawrence like the whole damn time, even though she's Mystique.
Yeah,
and then they had Tyrion, so they had to shove him in there somewhere else. it was just a hot mess. But yeah, Apocalypse.
Dude, any film that involves time travel that is in the Marvel universe is going to be a mess. That is a law of nature.
Marvel, hey man, Doctor Strange.
Travel correctly.
Doctor Strange. At the end.
Believe it until I see.
Check it out. Stellar. Check it out.
No, Marvel Universe specifically.
Oh.
There are plenty of movies where time travel is fine.
Wait till we get Cable, obviously. Man. That's coming, and I'm excited.
God.
Oh, man.
God. God help us.
But no, they actually, you know, Jennifer Lopez.
J-Lo.
Oh, my God. Could you even imagine? She was Jubilee.
Nice. I would watch that.
Insult to injury. Y'all know I'm Hispanic, right? Yeah, sure you. But yeah, God, and I don't want to call her Sansa Stark because that's not her name, but I can't think of the actress's name. Sophie Turner. There we go.
Yeah, there you go.
She was really good as Jean, and she didn't need much screen time to do it. They were all pretty darn good in their roles, and it was balanced out very nicely. Plus, we got Quicksilver to the Eurythmics. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Speaking of going back to the well, that was totally what that was, but that was still so much fun. I didn't care.
I mean, if they do it a third time, we're going to be like, okay, come on. But yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, I surprisingly enjoyed it. Like, it wasn't good, but I thought it was going to be just trash, and it was very solid. But the one guy I want to give a call out to is Oscar Isaacs, who should literally win an Oscar for holding that movie together while looking like that.
He looked ridiculous.
Yeah, and he somehow held it together. Like, it wasn't awful.
He wasn't like cracking up at every other scene. They tried to keep the mirrors away from him so he couldn't see himself.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, he was decent. I mean, he still certainly wasn't menacing because you can't be when you're a blue marshmallow. But
he
did a pretty good job.
I tried to think of the one thing that couldn't hurt us, and it was Oscar Isaacs as a blue marshmallow.
That sounds delicious.
He's like, whatever, man. I'm in Star Wars. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. I just need something to do until next year. All right, so I finished Luke Cage.
Okay.
Which I believe I had not done when last we talked. And I now understand why I was not as enthusiastic as you and Key were, Ariel.
Okay.
Why it really that? Picks up in the second half. And I think part of that is they were trying to that slower 70s style of filmmaking. And part of it was, I don't think they had 13 episodes, but they felt like they needed to have 13 episodes.
I agree. I totally agree with that. That season could have been 10 episodes easily.
Yeah. And probably should have been. The turning point for me, I believe, was episode 6. And it has a bizarre name because all the episodes have bizarre names. I don't remember what it was. But it was the one where you get Cottonmouth and Mariah's backstory.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they really executed well on that and really humanized them. And if you when you do that to your antagonist, you're in business.
Right on.
Yeah, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I didn't care for the sloppy boss battle episode at the end again.
Yeah.
Because that just doesn't work very well. I mean, it's the same reason Daredevil season 1 is ending, I felt, you know, fell a little flat also. Because at the end, it's just, you know, it's Fisk and Matt punching each other in an alley. I mean, because I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jessica Jones still has the strongest of the three.
Yeah.
Heroes, and you know, season endings. You know, even through two seasons of Daredevil, I think Jessica Jones still had the most challenge for the hero to go through.
Yeah, Jessica Jones could have been a mess also. That's a tough story to tell, and it's easy to screw it up and just, you know, go all women in refrigerators with it.
True.
So, they really did. I mean, it helps having David Tennant in your corner.
Yeah, true.
But, whatever happened to the CBS Supergirl series? Wasn't it CBS?
Supergirl series. It's on the CW now, but it was on CBS for its first season.
Did it end up being any good, or was it just kind of...
Cyrus, have you seen any of it?
I watched exactly two episodes of the first season. I think it is good, Riyadh, but I'm going to throw out the caveat that I think it skews younger in its target audience. And that's why I was kind of like not in on it. I was like, this is just not aimed at me. This is for younger people.
So I binge watched the first season on Netflix before the second season picked up on the CW. First season I think was just uneven. Like I think they were trying to make it work on CBS and they had the younger audience targeted. And I think some things hit and some things didn't. And they just did a lot of shotgunning to see what would work. And then now that they moved it to the CW for season 2, number one, they introduced Superman after like only having him in the distance or with a lens flare blocking his face. They actually got an actor for him. Took care of that. I think they're having a lot more fun with the show and like have a more cohesive story. So I think season 2 has been a lot stronger than season 1. It's a parallel universe to the other shows. So they don't have to worry about too much overlap and all the baggage from Arrow and The Flash.
Not this coming week.
But not this coming week. Yeah. They're going to do a four show crossover event this week.
Interesting.
Coming up. The first season kind of just has weird moments and like it's like way too earnest sometimes. Characters, not just the main character. And then season 2 improves a lot on the faults of season 1.
So you feel that it was part of the adjustment was because they were on the CW and they felt like they didn't have to appeal to the same audience?
I think, I don't know if it's just the standards that CBS had set for the kind of content they wanted to show or whatnot, but it just seemed like Supergirl was trying to be a much older show, like a 90s hero show in the way it was written and the plot. Yeah, not always. Like, you can tell that they were like kind of like doing that almost like in a forced way, but then also kind of doubling back and being more like a CW show throughout season 1. And then season 2, it's like, okay, we're home now. We know how this goes. So cut the BS. We need to have Superman because we already told everybody he existed in season 1. And the guy that plays Superman, Tyler Olsen?
Durden?
I forget. Yeah, something like that. Not Durden.
Tyler Perry is Superman.
Now that would be awesome. Where's
Tyler
that?
Tyler Perry's Superman. Damn. See, I'd go watch that.
But they introduce him. He nails the role of Superman, but he also doesn't get in the way. That's the hard part, right? Like, Supergirl's there. You don't want Superman to be like, well, got to take over for my cousin again because she fucked it up. It's like... No, they let her have her space. They smartly kind of introduced him just enough. And they just kind of – that was like a huge, in my opinion, a big puzzle piece to put down was to figure out how to deal with the presence of Superman. And then from there, kind of put some other characters in new places where they should have belonged in the first place and kind of went from there.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was a really odd dodge.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost like they created a problem they didn't need to have.
Yeah, for real, right? They could have just not had freaking Superman. It wouldn't have been that hard, but no.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do you know what time slot it was on CBS? Is it possible that there was some weirdness with – I don't know. I don't know how the hell
it was up against Gotham.
Oh. Well, that shouldn't have been hard.
Which is Tuesday is when I don't give a shit. Yeah. we're sure not watching either of those shows.
Fuck that Central.
Ugh.
Yeah. For real. I'm trying to find it, but it's not not that clear. Yeah,
it was just curiosity. Just curiosity.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a Berlanti CW hero show now. It's season two for through and through, I think.
Cool.
But they use aliens instead of metahumans as kind of the origin for people who have powers enough to create a challenge. And it's been working pretty well.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I Arrow, for some reason, doesn't mesh in those crossovers quite as well as I want him to. But that Supergirl Flash crossover was fun as hell last year.
Yeah, it was.
So I'm overall looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be fun. And honestly, Keyshawn would hate me for saying this, but Legends of Tomorrow is getting really good.
Okay.
They also restructured that show. They're like, oh yeah, forget the whole season one trope, like the overall plot arc that was everybody thought would focus the show, but it didn't actually at all. And we get rid of, you know, some of the main characters and restructure this. And hey, look, it's fun now. Awesome. It's much, much improved.
That's awesome. That's good to hear.
Yeah, Sarah is the captain now, so she gets to call the shots, and they've introduced a couple new characters, and yeah, it's much, much better. So,
how is she holding up there? She was always kind of like an accident, I felt like. She wasn't so much an actress, but as a good-looking stunt person whose character became beloved, and so all of a sudden they made something out of her.
Yeah.
She got the chops to pull that off?
It's working. I mean, that's all I can really say, I guess. I mean, it's not like she has a ton of drama that she has to, like, deal with right now, but she has her own little arc, like every character does this season, but it's working. She has the charisma she needs to be the captain of the group, and she's the resident badass, basically. So it that helps, because they established that.
Sometimes you don't have to be talented. Sometimes you just have to be likable. I call this the Jimmy Fallon principle.
Yeah, maybe. And you know, with so much history for her character, I think the audience will buy that she has leadership qualities if they've been following along all this time. So I think that helps too.
Oh yeah, I adore the character. I'm blanking on the actress's name, but
Katie Lotz, I think.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. That's exactly right. Thank you.
And yeah, she's doing a good job.
That's excellent.
Have either of you read any good books recently?
I am still working on the culture novels. So I'm in.
Oh, nice.
I'm into Use of Weapons right now. I haven't made it very far.
Oh, Jesus. Use of Weapons is brutal. It's really fucking good, but it is a rough ending. Oof.
Oh, man.
Okay. Yeah, you'll like that a lot, but good Lord. Just it's a great book, though. That's just like in terms of pure writing, I think that one's the best of them. It's a seriously good book.
Cool. Yeah, I'm enjoying it so far.
Is there a new hotness right now, Rion, in novels?
Oh, good question.
I know Gary Whitta was making his name heard, and then, you know, he went into film, it looked like.
I read his book, Abomination, which wasn't bad.
Oh, was it good?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, it was a little robot by the numbers, but it was fun.
Interesting. I don't know about new hotness. I'm more on the old hotness bandwagon right now. I just read, in very, very short period of time, I read William Gibson's latest, which actually isn't that new. It came out in late 2014, but it's called The Peripheral. And it's a depressing read right now.
People keep referencing it in his Twitter feed. I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah. It's, I mean, look, the yeah, 2016 has been rough, and you read that book and you'll see why. But man, it's nicely written. It has a lot of the same structure that, well, not quite. So Use of Weapons has this like interesting parallel structure to it. I don't want to say too much, but although I think probably by now it's obvious what's going on. But there is this interesting parallel structure to that. Peripheral doesn't quite go as complex with its structure, but there is a nice structure to it. And it has, it has some very interesting underlying ideas. And he does a good job both in developing the ideas and the worlds and the characters. So overall, really, really good. It kind of ends up marrying. So some of his more recent work has been set in the present rather than in the far future, like Neuromancer or this sort of thing is like, you know, sort of far future cyberpunk. Some of his other stuff, like pattern recognition, is set in the present and has some, you know, sci-fi elements to it, but really it's a sort of thriller drama thing. This is a really successful, I'd say, really successful marriage of those two conceits. And so it ends up being a really cool cyberpunk novel, but with a feel like this could actually happen. It does not feel so far off, so weird, futuristic as Neuromancer does.
I feel like cyberpunk is making a comeback as a genre, and I'm excited for it.
I'm ready.
Reality, Ghost in the Shell's coming.
I feel like dystopia is making a comeback in reality.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I think we're good to go.
Reality and fiction are quickly converging.
That's right. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Modulo that. The other one that I read recently, my uncle suggested this, and it was a really good book. Quick read. Like, it's only maybe 250, 300 pages. It's called The Risen. It's by a guy named Ron Rash. The guy writes, so the guy, Ron Rash, is from Appalachia, and so a lot of his novels are set there. This one in particular is sort of a weird combination, like detective story, coming of age story. It also plays with parallel timelines in kind of an interesting way, and the way that the world is revealed to you is nicely done. And the writing, like the sentence to sentence writing is really beautiful. So the story draws you in. The writing is good. It's a quick read, highly recommended. The Risen by Ron Rash. I can't say much about the specifics without giving a bunch away.
And it's about hillbillies?
No. Well, it's about a dude who is from North Carolina or something. And it's set in North Carolina, but it's really about families and sort of family history and coming of age and sort of, yeah, it's interesting. It's a good book.
Yeah, it's about hillbillies.
I mean, I don't know.
It's the family coming of age in North Carolina.
Yeah, you know. Sure. I don't know. What's the right way to say it? I mean, look, maybe it's like a combination of Look Homeward, Angel, and of Mice and Men. If you want, it's good. It's, I know that sounds weird, right? but
that's fantastic.
Actually,
I love it.
Both are referenced in the novel, and I like. I mean, it was like the author consciously tried to structure the novel that way. I thought it was really good. Like I said, a quick read. Totally worth it. Like, I read it in two sittings.
Basically, it's a Farewell to Arms meets Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, but the underground level specifically.
Oh.
Yeah. Anna Karenina meets the water level from the third Super Mario.
Yeah. I was just trying to think of, like, the stupidest things you could compare together when she made that. Oh, man. So, well, it's anyway. Christmas is coming up. At least that's what my television keeps telling me. So I want to talk video games.
Ooh.
Because I don't play them. But I admire those who do. Ariel, are you excited for this Final Fantasy XV game coming out?
I am holding off to see what comes of it as far as the video game press.
I see.
See some video of it and see how it goes. I kind of got burned by Final Fantasy 13. Didn't really enjoy it that much. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. I can't highly recommend the new Tomb Raider, though. That is definitely one of the best games this year by
wow.
far.
Wow. Oh, I didn't know there was even another one. How did I miss that?
Yeah, it came out last year for Xbox as kind of like a timed exclusive, and recently came out for PS4. I played the PS4 version. Very, very good. Like, really good. Really enjoyed it. I hope the movie that's coming out in 2 years or whatever matches the story and the style of that game.
I didn't know there was a film in development again.
Yeah, Alicia Vikander is going to play Lara Croft.
That's the girl she's from The Danish Girl?
I don't know. She was in Ex Machina, and she was in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay. I took a shot. So in the sequels, we got Watch Dogs 2 and Titanfall 2. Anything about those you can tell us?
Watch Dogs 2, I haven't played it, but I heard it's a significant improvement over the original, because Watch Dogs 1 had the most depressing story and the most psychopathic main character for a hero that I'd seen in a while. So sweet. Watch Dogs 2 sets things in San Francisco, and you're a little more kind of anonymous, kind of hacker bro, but apparently it's a lot of fun. And Titanfall 2 I'm playing right now. I haven't finished it, but man, that I wish they would do more media with the world of that game. Like, Halo is really cool, but Titanfall 2 is its own thing that's very, very cool as well, and very unique.
It seems like that would make a fun July movie pretty easily.
Yeah, just the opening cinematic of Titanfall 2 is like really cool to just watch. If they have it on YouTube, check it out for sure. Like, you got a real good feel for what the gameplay is like as well from that, even though it's kind of a little cinematic movie. Really, really cool.
Am I crazy? Did they make a Mass Effect movie?
They haven't, that I know of.
Because, like, that universe was cool as shit.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I'm totally with you, man. That's why I've been gunning so hard for this Ghost in the Shell film. That's a great universe and a great concept. And I don't know what the hell took them so long to, like, jump on that.
Probably Japanese film rights, if you ask me, because those are way difficult to get.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that's why we haven't seen a Footy Quitty movie yet. I understand.
Yeah, among other things, for sure. That's definitely going to be one of them.
Well, then why do we have 27 versions of Power Rangers?
Because Saban broke Japan, you know, 2 decades ago.
They're coming out with another one, right? There's another Power Rangers movie coming next year or something.
Yeah,
which looks shockingly okay
so far.
Yeah, it's a little chronically.
All I know is it exists. I have no. They're also bringing back a new television series to go with it, or to get to build up excitement for it, or something.
That's the thing. They haven't stopped making television.
Yeah, it's been a continuous circulation. It's like the penny,
but not in the U.S. Right?
No. Yeah, in the U.S. they have always had an adaptation of last year's Japanese show.
Yeah.
It's been on a Disney channel or something, so like it's not on regular TV, but it's never actually stopped, believe it or not.
I unfortunately believe it.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's nuts. So that's all through Saban. So Saban, since they have 20 years of relations with their Japanese, with Toei, their counterpart, they somehow have been very successful in licensing that stuff.
So you said they broke Japan. What did you mean by that?
Well, I guess they found a unique way of, you know, culturally bridging the divide. So like normally, like taking a Japanese property and just adding subtitles or redubbing it and bring it over to the U.S., you have to be very careful about how you do that, because Japanese companies are very strict about how you cross-license stuff. Like, anime has this problem where it takes a long time to cross-license something. It can cost a lot of money, and they're very careful about how they do it. You can license something for a while, then the license will die away, and it's hard to get it back. But with Power Rangers, what Saban did was say, hey, look, we'll take your footage, we'll buy it from you, but we're not going to have any Japanese actors, and we're not going to have any Japanese music, or any of that stuff that you actually made. We're just going to put our own people, you know, in live action.
Oh, that sounds so racist when it's presented that way.
Yes.
But it is.
That's what they did, and that's what they did. And it was a phenomenon, I think, because of that, because Americans kind of saw the cool robots and ninja stuff, and they didn't have to see foreign actors, frankly, which is terrible, but I think that's partially true.
Yeah.
And they got a more multicultural, frankly, also a more American looking, you know, cast. and I spoke right. English. So it was kind of this weird hodgepodge crap, and they just keep doing it. Like, it's been whatever, it's over 20 years now, and they keep doing the same thing. They just license the previous footage and put American actors intercut in between and have their own, make their own stories. And it somehow worked pretty well. So, yeah.
I was going to say, I don't want to, this is going back to this idea of, video game movies, the video game universes that we'd like to see. I want us to have a little bit of caution, because there are some cool video game universes that nevertheless seem destined to be destroyed in their transition to movies. And here I'm thinking of the recent Assassin's Creed trailer I saw,
oh, yeah. which
frankly made me very sad. Holy balls, that looks terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the next great hope too, and it just doesn't look like it's going to be good either.
Yeah.
Jesus, what? Oh my God, that was not a...
They're the new comic book movies. They can't get them right.
It's not that hard, I feel. At least
no,
I,
it's not. The comic movies weren't either.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
They just... What? Some of these guys running these studios just don't understand. But you know...
Possible...
Go ahead, Riyadh.
Like, what? Why is it so hard to get this right? Like, the story is... Okay, there's a little complexity to the story. They can find... They can kind of adapt it for... Why does it have to just be such... Like it just looks terrible. Just...
There is no market forces to force them to make them better. And this is what these guys have figured out. I'm already hearing that Ben Affleck Batman solo film is already in trouble. Because the Hollywood guys just don't care. Because they can ship shit and it will do it, – it's still going to make a billion.
So like for
– It's fucking Batman.
So you're saying now that they saw what Batman versus Superman did, they're totally cool with shitty Batman? Just because, like,
that movie still made a lot of money. It didn't make as much as it should have had it actually been good, but it did make money.
Yeah, that's sad.
Hollywood's all sad these days.
I guess I'll just keep playing Assassin's Creed video games then.
Yeah.
And even there, that you know, the story can get kind of crazy, but at least it's you know, pretty well done, well put together.
This may be bad form to mention on a podcast on a podcast, but I was recently watching Movies with Mikey, and he did an episode about the third Harry Potter film, which I watched because I did not like that movie. I feel like it's one of the best books, and I was really disappointed with the film. But Mikey Newman actually made a strong argument for that film being like the basis for the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the success it's enjoyed. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, me too. I saw the same episode.
It was the first post Chris Columbus one, and they went with a then unknown Alphonse Cuarón. I hope to God I'm saying that right.
I think it's Cuarón is the way you would say his name in Spanish.
Balls.
Anyway,
okay, but I'm so glad you're here to correct me though. and all the changes we wrought and
ignore me.
Yeah, and I appreciated what Mikey was talking about, but I think he was showing his youth there a little bit in that episode because, with all due respect, I think he was hand-waving away what a triumph that the Chris Columbus films are in that series. Prior to those first two Harry Potter films, and I'm going to throw in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings as well, and the opening years of the 21st century, adaptations from novels were a really dicey proposition. But those two guys got it right. Those five movies that came out in, I think, a 3 or 4 year time span really crushed it and like laid the foundation for how to make a good adaptation.
Yeah. I can totally see that for sure.
Yeah.
I think Chris Columbus doesn't maybe get enough credit for how much he crammed into his movies and managed to make it work. I just actually watched both those first two Harry Potter movies the last week or so. And I was like, man, he got this started. I mean, to bootstrap up that universe and make it work without it feeling like it just so over bloated with lore and myth and background and
there's a lot of lore.
Yeah. And he really pulled it off. I agree, Cyrus.
Yeah. I actually think that second film is actually somehow better than the novel it's based on. Because he was really good about culling the wheat from the chaff there. But I mean, I appreciated Mikey's arguments for, you know, for the third film. and, you know, kind of gave me stuff to think about that, you know, you, bringing in auteur directors onto these IP, you know, you can get some really interesting results. On the other hand, you can also get Batman versus Superman.
Are we calling Zack Snyder an auteur? I guess so.
Well, he's got a very slick sense of storytelling design. There's no question there. It's just that he makes really inappropriate R-rated action films with it is the problem. But I do like the way he puts these movies together. I just wish there was, like, you know, a plot that was holding it out, that was at the center of the chaos. So here's a hypothetical. And I think maybe we can close out after this one. But so this Wonder Woman film that's coming out next year, how critical is it that movie be good to Warner Brothers? Or excuse me, AT&T.
Are they going to change their name? I don't even know.
I do not even know.
Time Warner Cable has changed its name, but are they no longer part of the AT&T umbrella? I don't remember.
Time Warner Cable is its own company now because they've merged with Charter, right? So they're like Spectrum or something like that. And
then exactly.
Time Warner Media, which is like AOL Time Warner, they're now owned by AT&T.
Yeah.
So maybe it's going to be AT&T and T?
I don't know.
AT cubed? I don't know. As a fan, I think it's if that movie isn't good, I'm kind of done with the DC Entertainment Universe, whatever the hell they call it.
That's where I'm at because I seriously doubt Snyder's ability to make these movies the way they should feel correctly. He's just not the guy. He doesn't understand what makes the DC universe work when it does work, and. If Patty Jenkins can't make Wonder Woman work, then I think they're in real trouble to the point where they just need to, like, maybe they'll probably just bail on the whole thing.
Wait, did I misunderstand? Are you saying that you think we should give Zack Snyder one more chance, or you're saying
I'm done with Snyder? I was so disappointed, and that's what I'm saying. Like, Snyder is not making Wonder Woman. So if someone else can come in with a different vision and improve upon it, then I think the roadmap itself is broken.
Even if he is a problem. Yeah.
Yep. It doesn't bode well that Flash has burned through two directors already.
Yeah. And you have the whole Suicide Squad thing, which doesn't help either.
Yeah.
In terms of working against the hypothesis that it's more than just the director, the one directors that we've had. For the majority
aren't
of the
they aren't they trying to spin out some Harley Quinn standalone or something? Or is that
yep?
They are doing that.
That's what I read.
Yeah, and if Wonder Woman tanks, they'll pull the plug immediately, and they probably should.
Of course, I don't know about that. I mean, she's a talented actress. I mean, people will watch them. I don't know.
It should be their Deadpool, right? If they do it correctly, but
yeah, absolutely.
I just have serious reservations of their ability to do that at this point. I mean, like they're literally struggling with Batman right now.
Yeah, that should be
how do you fuck up Batman?
Well, I guess the answer is
Gotham.
You put Arnold in it and Silverstone too. And
oh god,
that was the same
movie. Nipples. The answer is nipples.
Everybody, chill out. Cool it.
Freeze. That reminds me, for some reason, Cyrus, any opinion of Dolph Lundgren in the season of Arrow?
Love it. I love when he beat the shit out of Ollie. I was like, oh, he's still got the boxing moves.
Yeah.
He still got it. Good for him.
If he had just said, I will break you, that thing
you know,
that would have been.
Sometime this season, right?
I must break
you. Yeah, I'm really enjoying Arrow.
Yeah, season 5 is a huge pickup in quality for sure.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see how Rogue One does here in a few weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard it argued, and I don't agree with this, but I see the merit of the argument, that Star Wars, like, without it's only good because of lightsabers. And really? I mean, lightsabers are pretty great, don't get me wrong. And it's definitely my favorite thing about the mythos, but I think there's a deeper thing going on there. And Rogue One is we're gonna actually find out if that's true or not.
Look for 2019's Star Wars lightsabers. That's just the name of the movie. Right. That's it. Just talking.
The characters are purple lightsaber and green lightsaber and
saber
primitive lightsaber built from
yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Jesus. But yeah, there's nary a Jedi to be seen in this thing. So.
But they have Donnie Yen, so hopefully that will make up for it.
See, but here's the thing. One of the greatest Star Wars properties of all time was called X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, and it was a PC game. And that had zero lightsabers in it, and it was still amazing.
I agree.
That's so.
A big part of why they were the first film was revolutionary, is those dogfights were so damn awesome.
Yeah. All I gotta do is do Top Gun in space. I mean, how hard is that?
How do you have a beach volleyball tournament in space?
They're on the beach. They are on the beach. I've seen the trailer. It's in play, gentlemen.
Oh my God.
No, it's interesting you bring that up. Top Gun was actually pitched by Tony Scott as a real life Star Wars.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
A little bit of history there for you. You know that film is 30 years old now?
Yeah.
That just takes my breath away.
Oh, nice.
That was well done.
I'll admit, I liked that movie. I still do.
No, it's great. It's a great movie.
Yeah. Never been remade, at least not yet.
Jesus Christ, why did you say that? Oh my God, no, of course it is. It's going to be with an F-35. The government's responsible as a way of distracting from the fact that the F-35 is a piece of shit.
No one ever actually flies one. It's all just simulators.
God.
No, even better. Do it with drones.
Oh, no.
The drone's name is Goose. No actual person dies.
Oh, my God. Or it could be drones versus people. It's like, that already happened. That was called stealth.
Yeah.
Oh, that movie was like tongue-in-cheek bad. It knew exactly what it was doing.
Oh, man. No shit. You remember, oh, my God. The scene from the trailer with, like, the circular explosions in the air.
Oh, yeah.
That thing was a Trump fest.
I thought you were going to say atrocious, and that would also have been a true statement.
An atrocious,
but it was so self-aware that it was bad. It was kind of like, you know what? I saw what you did there.
Meanwhile, we can't – oh, wait. Are we getting Pacific Rim 2? I can't even remember now if it's on
Pacific
or off.
Pacific Rim : Maelstrom.
Oh, God. Well, this time we have to make sure not to sit next to those people who took the movie really seriously.
Is it tonight working on it?
Didn't want us laughing.
Oh, right.
Wait, say again.
Is it Stephen DeKnight working on it?
Yeah, he's the director.
Daredevil, yeah.
Oh, wait, so it's not what's his name anymore?
Del Toro is off.
Guillermo? Yeah.
Guillermo is gone.
Shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me sad.
I think he's still like executive producer or something, but he's not directing it yet.
I have great hope for that movie.
Yeah, hopefully it matches up well with the original in terms of fun, at least.
Well, I mean, look, as long as they have a scene where a robot hits a kaiju with some kind of, like, ship or building or...
I want a rocket elbow. I need that again. I need something like that. That quality. That ilk.
Yeah.
Listen,
yeah.
I just enjoyed X-Men Apocalypse, so I'm... Everything is on the table as far as I'm concerned.
Including the space beach volleyball. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to totally stop thinking about that now that's been thrown out there.
Instead of it being the sky with palm trees, you have like a planet in the background, you know, field of stars. It could work.
Fire up the Kenny Loggins. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They need to bring Kenny Loggins back or whatever. Is it Kenny Loggins?
It's Kenny
Loggins.
Yeah,
Highway to the Danger Zone.
Yeah, we bring him back to do the soundtrack for the new.
You know, Archer brought him back as a villain, right?
No, really?
It's an incredible episode, and they totally did it.
Wow.
He ends the episode with a country cover of Danger Zone.
Oh, my God. Wait, is that in the season where it's like Archer Vice? Is that like in the fifth season?
Yes, it is.
I love
obviously cocaine was involved. So.
People hated that season, but I loved it. I think
those people are wrong. Archer's amazing,
yeah,
top to bottom.
Absolutely.
Freaking show. Yeah, they did a cover for the new Star Wars Top Gun with a theremin. I think everything would work out just fine.
No, it's got to be orchestral. John Williams is going to compose a symphonic cover of Danger of Highway.
You don't think you'd be you don't think you'd be Duel of the Fates?
Yeah.
To volleyball? Oh my god.
I feel the need for hyperspeed, gentlemen.
Obviously, the right strategy in space volleyball is let the Wookiee win.
No one can hear you, Spike.
Oh god.
See, it writes itself. I mean,
really, it does. It does. I think we've already.
I don't know. We've been dad joking for 5 minutes. I don't know if there's a movie.
How dare you say that's not a movie?
Listen, I'd watch it, but I also watched X-Men Apocalypse. Unironically.
Fair enough.
And Stealth, because it was on at the gym.
I'm not going to lie. I've seen that movie pretty much end to end.
Yeah. I've seen it once, beginning to end.
I could hear it in the tone of your voice.
As you said it, I could feel the pain.
It feels good, guys. Let's close it down.
All right.
So like I said, I think it's like 6 in the morning in New York right now. by my calculations based on nothing. Riyad Wabi, currently of New York, New York. Thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad I randomly noticed that we were going to have a podcast.
Ariel Rodriguez, once again of Austin, Texas, after a worldwide sojourn. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I have been Cyrus Mardazavi of Kirkland, Washington. This episode and previous episodes can be found at fullofsoundandfury.com or via subscription to iTunes and or SoundCloud. This has been a Rise Again production, 2016.